welcome to the latest Funds Fan podcast. I'm Kyle Caldwell, your host. I am the collectives editor at Interactive Investor. Coming up later on the podcast is an interview with Alex Wright. Alex is the fund manager of the Fidelity Special Values Investment Trust and the Fidelity Special Situations Fund. For the first part of the podcast, I'm joined by Tom Bailey, who is the ETF editor at Interactive Investor, to chat through a couple of news items. Tom, let's start off with the stock market sell-off that's been occurring in China. The first question listeners will want to know the answer to is, what's been going on?
Yeah, sure. So there's lots of things going on, really. But broadly, China is cracking down on its tech companies, so to speak. So since the start of the year, there's been kind of ongoing investigations into the supposed anti-competitive practices of many of China's leading tech companies, so Alibaba, JD, Tencent. But more recently, which has really hurt markets, has been this kind of attempt by the Chinese authorities to rein in foreign stock exchange listings. So lots of Chinese tech companies have in recent years listed abroad. And to get around the kind of complex Chinese rules around foreign investment, they've kind of used complex legal loopholes. Chinese government has kind of ignored this for the last decade or so, a bit longer really. But now it's come under fire by the Chinese authorities, particularly following the listing of Didi, which is the Chinese version of Uber, a few months ago. So China has now placed new restrictions on the ability of Chinese companies to list on foreign exchanges. And a kind of really big part of this is this kind of divergence between US and China. And so US regulators are now talking about they're going to start requiring Chinese companies that list on New York exchanges to allow US auditors better access to company data. Chinese authorities are not happy about this, so they've kind of suggested that Chinese companies shouldn't comply with this when it happens. But then the risk of this is that these companies might be delisted from NASDAQ or New York Stock Exchange. So there's all these questions about the future longevity of lots of these big Chinese tech companies, Alibaba, JD, Meituan, which are all listed in New York in recent years, and how long they actually will stay on the exchanges. There's no suggestion they're going to be taken off anytime soon. But that risk is, you're seeing that reflected in the decline in prices recently. But there's also some kind of specific things for certain parts of what you can broadly call Chinese tech. So one part of Chinese tech is a big education tech sector. The Chinese government's cracking down on this in terms of they're saying they're restricting their ability to offer tutoring to students, online tutoring. They said some of these companies have to go as a not-for-profit status. So this has destroyed the value of several large multi-billion dollar Chinese companies. And so that's weighed on the share price of individual companies, but it also, to some investors, it kind of signified the fact that Beijing is prepared to destroy almost a multi-billion dollar sector to pursue its specific policy goals. So everyone always said there was political risk when it comes to investing in China, but this is it in practice now. And it's maybe caused a shift in attitude of some investors when it comes to China. And obviously, you can see all this reflected in the fund and trust and ETF performance data. Fund managers have been in recent years overweight some of these large Chinese tech companies like Tencent, Alibaba, either in China-focused funds or even in emerging market funds, because they're such a big part of the index now.
Yeah, that's true, Tom, as you mentioned. Yeah, also some emerging market fund managers have heavy weightings towards the China tech giants. I mean, Fidelity China Special Situations, for example, had at the end of June just over 20% of its assets in Tencent and Alibaba. It is a tricky one for fund managers, as both those companies are such a large part of the index. Both those two firms, they comprise just over 25% of the MSCI China index. So because of that, those two stocks have such a big influence on how the overall index performs. And the MSCI China Index is what China fund managers are ultimately aiming to beat and outperform in order to have value.
It does seem that investors have not, at least retail investors, have not been put off by all this, and have in fact been viewing the falls as a potential buying opportunity. You can see the inflow data for funds, trusts, and ETFs too. But it's become something of an article of faith for investors now. This kind of idea of buying the dip. And often it works, but investors need to be, I think, more cautious when it comes to this China situation, because this isn't a sell-off caused by growth scares or interest rate rises where you can just say, well, I'm in it for the long term, you know, prices go up and down in markets because these events, they go up and down. You just hold out, and in the long term, you know, it should be positive. But, you know, so perhaps the fears around China tech and China stocks in general are overdone, but the whole episode does raise fundamental questions about the future of some of these companies and also the whole political risk of investing in Chinese equities more generally.
I mean, we did see on Interactive Investor in our top 10 most popular investment trust table for the month of July, both Fidelity China Special Situations and JP Morgan China Growth and Income re-entered the top 10. And both those trusts exited the top 10 a couple of months ago. I mean, perhaps this is an indication, as you mentioned, Tom, that, that this does show that some investors are viewing this sell-off in the China equity market as an opportunity to try and buy the dip and take advantage of the cheaper valuations that have arisen. Of course, one of the golden rules of investing is not to overpay. And yeah, again, it is clear that some investors are viewing the sell-off as an opportunity to buy the dip, rather than panicking and crystallizing their losses. The next news piece we're going to cover is an update for the long-suffering investors in the Woodford Equity Income Fund. Tom, it is not the news that those investors will have been hoping for.
Yeah, so we saw the latest letter to investors from Link, which is the fund administrator, which is tasked with winding up the fund. So, so far, investors have received 4 distributions from the sale of the fund's assets. But there's still over 100 million of assets left in the funds, which investors are waiting to receive. Obviously, the problem is the money is still tied up in companies in the portfolio. And a lot of them are unlisted, very small, quite hard to sell companies. So Lynx said basically in the letter, don't expect another distribution until at least next year. Of course, it could drag on even longer than that.
We will, of course, keep investors up to date on ii.co.uk when there is further news to report on those remaining assets that are in the Woodford Equity Income Fund. The final news story we're going to look at is the concerns that have been raised by the Financial Conduct Authority regarding some of the ethical and sustainable fund applications it's had across its desk. The regulator said that some of those ethical and sustainable fund applications fall below expectation and contain claims that do not bear scrutiny. Tom, you covered this news story. Could you shed some further light on what those concerns are that the regulator has raised?
Yeah, so as our listeners will know, in recent years, there's been this kind of increased appetite for ESG funds. And there's also been a big rush of fund houses to launch ESG products, right? But the FCA says that they've become, to quote, concerned by the number of poor quality fund applications. So according to the regulator, many ESG fund applications do not contain sufficient and clear information that explains their chosen strategy and how this relates to the assets selected for the fund. The FCA gives some examples, obviously unnamed, so you don't actually get the name of any of the bad applications. But they noted that one was a proposed passive fund that had an ESG-related name, but it was deemed misleading as it was looking to track an index that was not actually ESG-focused. So kind of to address this, the FCA has outlined a set of guiding principles for fund houses, which kind of have stipulations on kind of rules around appropriate naming of funds and also require properly spell out the ESG strategy and goals, etc.
I mean, it is a shame that there was no naming and shaming, but I think overall, you know, it's a good thing for consumers to see that the regulator has been giving fund management firms a bit of a ticking off in this respect, given the potential risks of greenwashing. Greenwashing is a term coined to describe the situation where asset managers push themselves or their funds as green through marketing rather than fully integrating ethical or sustainability factors into their investment processes. In my opinion, it is a very worrying trend. As a starting point, to find the best of breed ethical or sustainable funds that are managed in a genuinely ethical manner, take a look at Interact Investor's ACE 40 list of investments, which is comprised of funds, investment trusts, and exchange traded funds. Check out our ACE 40 at ii.co.uk/ii-ace. For our fund manager interview, I'm joined by Alex Wright, who is the manager of the Fidelity Special Values Investment Trust and the Fidelity Special Situations Fund. So, Alex, you are a contrarian investor, so therefore like to go against the crowd and have exposure to out-of-favour shares. Does this mean that you solely focus on value shares?
So you're right, Carl. The fund that we run is very much a value contrarian strategy. But that doesn't mean, I guess, that the stocks always have to come up, I guess, on traditional metrics in terms of value. I would say overall that the fund definitely does have a low price to book bias. And that is the most consistent bias you see in the fund in terms of companies that have lower price to book than the market. But sometimes we'll buy some companies actually that trade on quite high price to book if we think their fortunes are out of favour. But that would tend to be reasonably rare because particularly nowadays, stocks that have high returns on capital tend to trade at higher multiples. So overall, I would say that the value moniker is a very good moniker for the fund overall.
It's been a strong period for the UK market since last April, really. Given the gearing levels on the trust, which is just shy of 20%, I'm assuming you're optimistic there's still plenty more upside potential to come.
Yeah, I'm very optimistic. And you're correct that the trust actually breached its highest level of gearing, just over 20% last autumn. And while we have seen very strong absolute performance and also relative to other equity markets since then, I still see very high upside in the strategy. And I think particularly you need to look at the recent strong performance of the UK equity market on a more long-term perspective, because actually the UK market's been a strong underperformer over the prior 5 years, particularly since the EU referendum. And therefore, you're only really starting to catch up just a small percentage of that underperformance. So I think there's plenty more to go for. And that is why that the gearing continues to stay high on both my products.
So where are you finding the best value opportunities at the moment? And could you run through three companies that you think are unjustly being overlooked by the market?
So I think the good news is that there's actually opportunity right across the market cap spectrum and across sectors in the UK. So most areas of the UK market are actually undervalued. But when you look at some particular areas of opportunity, and certainly for some of the newer ideas in the fund, I would say the consumer discretionary space is a really interesting one, because that's been an area where consumer spend has been quite depressed over the last 5 years. And the first stock that we bought into in the fund over the last year that I wanted to talk about in this area is Inchcape, which is actually now a top five position in the trust and in special situations. It's a global distributor of motor cars. And that's an area clearly it was very badly hit in the lockdown in Q2 last year, as showrooms had to be shut and consumers didn't buy cars. But it actually, with the downturn, you had a pretty unique environment, because normally when there's an economic recession, you see an oversupply of cars. So actually you see a big hit to pricing as well as to volumes. Whereas this time, as showrooms and particularly factories were closed, actually what you've got is a shortage of cars, because supply actually fell faster than demand. And so in the upturn, you've actually got an incredibly strong pricing environment for Inchcape, which is allowing them to increase their margins, which is very different from a normal downturn where you see margin pressure. And then I think the really exciting thing about Inchcape as well, over and above this short-term recovery, is that actually you're increasingly seeing the business model of motor retail change, with much more direct sales and much more continuing involvement in the initial seller of the car in after sales because of digital channels. And I think as a distributor, Inchcape can do really well from that. Whereas actually there's some challenges to maybe some of the more traditional retail business models, which some of the other UK motor dealers still participate in. In terms of a second stock that's worth talking about, is Mighty. So that's another big position in the fund, a top 20 position, something that we had before the crisis, but we materially added to in the later part of last year, because this is a stock that's going through a big specific turnaround. The whole support services sector has been through a lot of turmoil over the last 5 years, with a number of quite large companies really coming a cropper, and indeed a number of companies actually exit, the most obvious of those being Carillion. But that has set up a much better competitive environment for those that are left. and also for companies that have gone through big turnarounds like Serco, or now like Mighty under new leadership, really cleaning up the business, improving the balance sheet. And then in Mighty's case, they've also done a substantial refinancing of the business and the acquisition of one of their rivals, which was out of previous bankruptcy, Interserve. So the quality of the business is really improved. At the same time, the amount of competition in the space is reduced. And they're now seeing quite a big bounce back as offices and shops reopen, because security and cleaning are two big services that, that Mighty do. So again, a stock-specific story that we like to see, as well as a sectoral issue, which is improving, and a bounce back from COVID for Mighty. And then finally, one that I think is worth talking about, might be seen less as a normal value stock, is Ryanair, something that we bought into over the last 9 months, and again is coming up for a top 20 position now. This is a stock that it's really about the changes to the industry because of COVID. So Ryanair has always been the low-cost leader in European air travel. But actually, they've been struggling a bit with labour shortages and increases in costs pre-pandemic, and the stock hadn't been doing very well. I think those issues have really now gone away. There's clearly significant overcapacity in labour in the airline sector as demand has collapsed. And Ryanair are very well equipped to readjust downwards their cost base, which they have done. And then there's been a huge exit of capacity in terms of a further cutback from the legacy carriers, who have really burnt very substantial amounts of cash and produced very large losses in this downturn. So Ryanair's competitive position has really improved. And while I think there is a question mark about whether European-wide air travel gets back to the levels we saw pre-pandemic, I think there's no question that Ryanair will get back to the volumes they used to do, because they're going to take substantial market share. And with less competition, there's every possibility that actually Ryanair can be quite a bit more profitable business going forward than it was pre-pandemic, because pricing could be somewhat higher from previously very low levels. And so that's very much an industry trend that we're seeing here that has been brought about by COVID.
You mentioned that consumer discretionary is a sector that you're currently favouring. Could you give some more details of why you're overweight that sector but underweight consumer staples?
So obviously two of those names we just talked about are consumer discretionary names. And indeed, the consumer in the UK since 2015 has been reasonably weak. And so this is a sector that's cheap and undervalued. But with the big savings that have been built up through COVID, increasingly the consumer has money to spend and is going out there and spending it. And therefore, that's very positive for that sector that's particularly UK biased in the UK market. Whereas if you look at the staple sector, that's a much more international sector. So the likes of Unilever, Reckitt, very international companies, and demand for their products are much more stable through time. So they haven't been depressed. And if anything, actually, they got a bit of a benefit through COVID, particularly likes of Reckitt, where hygiene products, etc., people spent more on them. But if you look at what's now happening today is reopening and people are spending back again on discretionary items. If anything, sales are coming off a bit. And these companies are seeing quite large margin pressure because costs are going up a lot on raw materials. So in a sector which is expensive and that's done well and that is now experiencing margin pressure, that's something that I'm very underweight. Indeed, that's been quite a benefit recently, as we have seen profit warnings through both of those companies we talked about, Reckitt and Unilever, which are quite large sector weights in terms of the UK market and are owned quite extensively by some of the fund's rivals.
As mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, it's been a strong period for the UK stock market over the past 15 months. And there have been some signs in recent months that investors have been returning to the UK market. But to me, the market still remains fairly unloved. There have been a number of overseas companies making bids for UK firms, but investors don't seem to be viewing the UK stock market as a bargain. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I very much would agree with that. I think the UK market, despite strong performance over the last 9 months, continues to be much cheaper than other international markets. particularly versus the US market, which remains on very high multiples. And I think that the big increase in bid activity that you've seen, which indeed has been very beneficial for the fund, which we've just had Meggitt, Ultra Electronics, John Lang all recently, is a reflection that UK assets versus assets, either on other stock markets or in private markets, are just at too low a valuation. And to me, it is a surprise that you haven't seen more of a valuation pickup in the UK, given all of this activity. And I think that is just a fact that investors more broadly have been a bit slow to actually increase their weight to UK equities. And so that's why I think there's one of the reasons why I think there's still such a good opportunity here in UK equities as a whole.
And our final question is something that we've been asking all fund managers that have appeared on the podcast since the start of July. Do you personally invest in Fidelity Special Values and also the open-ended Fidelity Special Situations Fund?
Yes, I do. So when you look at outside of the Fidelity Share Scheme that everyone at a senior level participates in, my ownership of both Special Values and Special Sits combined would be my largest personal investment. And I've tended to invest in the trust at times that it's at a discount. And when it isn't at a discount, I've tended to invest in the Special Situations open-ended fund, which you obviously always buy into at an AV.
Alex, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
The final part of the podcast is our fund spotlight feature. For this episode, Liberty Godfrey, fund analyst at Interact Investor, is going to run through one of the funds in Interact Investor's ACE 40 list. Liberty, what have you chosen?
So I've chosen Aegon Ethical Equity Fund, which aims to provide a combination of income and capital growth over the long term. It invests in a portfolio of UK stocks and excludes companies that are engaged in unethical activities, whilst integrating environmental, social and governance considerations within the analysis of companies. The investment process is focused on lesser researched areas of the UK market, which results in a bias towards mid and small cap companies. The fund is around £630 million in size and is managed by the highly experienced manager, Audrey Ryan, who has over 26 years experience in the industry.
Could you run through a bit more details regarding the ethical process of the fund?
Yeah, so the active approach of the fund screens out companies that engage in certain unacceptable activities that could have a negative effect on the environment and society at large. Exclusions cover areas such as animal welfare, military, nuclear power, gambling, alcohol and tobacco. And also Aegon conduct an ethical and sustainable investing survey every 2 years to ask investors and advisors for feedback on their approach, which is then implemented into their process. The team believe that the benefits of investing ethically deepen their knowledge, strengthen their conviction, and promote a long-term focus for investment.
So what areas is the fund currently favouring, and could you give us some stock examples?
Yeah, so the fund invests in a diverse portfolio of 70 holdings, made up primarily of UK mid-cap companies, as well as exposure to large cap, AIM and small cap companies. Top industry exposures within the fund include industrial goods and services, technology, financial services and insurance. Also, some of the largest holdings include RELX, which is a multinational information and analytics company, Diploma, which is an international group of businesses supplying specialized technical products and services, and GB Group, which is an identity verification, location intelligence and fraud prevention company. Also, some of the current ethical and sustainable themes within the portfolio include education, good health and well-being, environment, climate change and renewable energy, social housing and infrastructure, and software delivering solutions.
And finally, how does the fund stand out from the crowd?
Well, Aegon Ethical Equity features on the ACE 40 as a UK equity adventurous option. It also falls within the ACE Avoids category, meaning the fund screens out specific sectors considered to be unethical. The fund is managed by a highly experienced manager and team, and the investment process aims to generate outperformance for the fund at different stages of the economic cycle, with performance driven primarily by stock selection. This, along with the fund's ethical process, could allow investors to be mindful of the environment and society whilst gaining a diversified exposure to the UK.
That's all for this episode. I hope that you've enjoyed listening. And if that is the case, then please do give us a like, tell your friends, and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Of course, you can find lots more investment insight and ideas at ii.co.uk. We'll be back in a couple of weeks.